My gorgeous, lovely listeners of the Nathaniel Bibby podcast, what a privilege it is today to bring you an interview that was live just last week with Dr. John DeMartini talking about the impacts of coronavirus, how to get your mindset right to leverage the opportunities in the marketplace at the moment. Dr. DeMartini, somebody that has had a huge impact on my life and my business, and certainly when I got the news of coronavirus and it really hit home, he was able to share some insights with me that I thought were really valuable. Enjoy the episode, guys. And we are live. Very privileged to have Dr. John DeMartini in the house for my third interview, I believe it is.
Yes.
How have you been?
I've been doing great. I can't complain.
Where are you tuning in from?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
So, John, one of the reasons that I wanted to get you on is that when all this started, the COVID stuff started, I had a bit of a panic attack, to be honest. Like, all of a sudden, my family, they were all coming over for a housewarming I was having, and one by one, they started canceling. And I realized the implications of what was happening. Like, I wasn't going to be able to see a lot of them for a while. And then I was thinking about the implications of my business. And about 11 p.m. or midnight or so, I tuned into Facebook and I saw that there was a group that somebody in your community had started. And you hopped on a video and you gave me complete clarity all of a sudden about how to deal with the situation and how to react. And I'd love it if you could share some of your insights with the audience.
I'm not sure that there's really anything to react to other than our own perceptions. Mm-hmm. We're responding to our perceptions. We have control over our perceptions, our decisions, and our actions in life. And if we perceive more challenges than support, more downsides than upsides, well, we're going to physiologically respond as if there's a predator there challenging us. And we're going to go into a fight or flight kind of response. And that clouds the clarity of our forebrain. And that makes us go into kind of an amygdala response. And we want a quick fix of save me, save me. And I think it's wiser and to stop and ask, let's not compare what's going on with what it had been in the past. Let's not compare what's going on with our fantasies of the future. Let's get grounded. This is what's happening. And now ask the question, how specifically what is happening? How's it helping me fulfill what I'm intending to do?
Yeah.
And if you're not clear about what you're going to intend, then you need to be clear about that, because you're going to be an automaton reacting to everything around you if you don't have clarity of where you're going. And then you want to ask, what is the highest priority thing I could be doing right this minute that can help me fulfill this objective and solve whatever the problem is and do what you can? And because that's all a human being can ever do without our circumstances is change their perception or change their action, and having the decision which one or both to do. If you can ask, there's a really powerful principle here. I don't know how you want me to go on this, but I do want to share this.
So,
it's been shown that if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, your day undergoing entropy will fill up with low priority distractions that don't. Just like if you don't put your money into assets, it gets wiped out by liabilities and depreciables. And if you don't put your energy into high productive things, it ends up with distraction. But so too, not only in our motor actions, but in our sensory perceptions. If we don't ask, how is whatever's happening in our world helping us get what's really most important to us? We're not asking the most fruitful question we could be asked. How is what's happening helping us fulfill what is deeply meaningful and inspiring to us? It's easy to run the story and be a victim of your history. It takes mastery to ask the question and answer, be accountable. And with that comes innovation, because it's been shown that once we can link things to whatever's highest on our value and we pursue those and solve problems that we innovate, we create, we wake up genius, we come up with solutions. So prioritizing our sensory awareness by asking how is what's ever happening helping us fulfill what's truly most important to us, our highest priority, our highest value, and how what actions can we do that's highest in priority. Those are the two things that keep us objective, more resilient, more adaptable, less emotionally reactive, less volatile, less in fantasy and fear mode, and more likely to come up with productive actions that get us transcending this so-called illusion and challenge that we face. So prioritization is very important, and questions that we ask is very important to turn the so-called COVID into Saint COVID. Because I personally have thousands of benefits and upsides sent to me by students all over the world of COVID. So yeah. They've chosen to see the upsides to it and not just the downsides.
Yeah. And I think that's what I did. I got out an A3 piece of paper and I wrote at the top, how specifically is what is happening right now serving me? And, you know, I come up with one thing. And then before I know it, the whole page was full and I felt very comfortable about what was happening. It was very enlightening. So I thank you for that. I'm sure it had a big impact on a lot of people around the world. A lot of the people tuning in are business owners and entrepreneurs. Now, it's proven throughout history with a lot of the people that have built a lot of wealth in the world that it's in times of crisis that a lot of wealth is created. Do you see that happening in the world at the moment?
Yeah. I'm very fortunate to have taken advantage of this opportunity and have made more money in the last 7 months than ever in my life because I learned many years ago to maintain cash reserves for cashes for the crash. And I don't mean live cash, like money sitting in a pillow bag, but I mean in liquid counts that you can convert into new investments. Yeah. And I tell people that if you don't have cash reserves, you pass up great opportunities to buy when everybody else freaking out because you have a guaranteed return.
Yeah.
But that's not the only factor. The other factor is that if you really care about humanity, you're going to keep current with what humanity needs. And when there's a situation like this, COVID, there's new needs. And if you can find a way of filling those needs, there's vast fortune sitting there. And we'll use Amazon as an example. Because he was foresighted enough to realize that's where the market's going and becoming a disruptor, he has hired hundreds of thousands of people now. Over 100,000 people have been hired to keep up with the demands. I saw the first week that COVID started hitting America and they started shutting things down. It was a little Chinese restaurant in Los Angeles. I'd flown in from Tokyo. I was kind of stuck in LA for a bit. And there's this little Chinese restaurant, hole in the wall, that saw all these people. Apparently the Chinese restaurant owner had some sort of influence and there were a whole lot of people that go, what's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen to my job? And he says, I'm going to hire you. And they started doing Chinese deliveries at reasonable prices, any distance. And I think he hired 37 people in 2 days to run bicycle runs and deliver food because everybody was now staying at home and the Chinese restaurant boomed. So here's somebody, instead of bitching, they were enriching. And they were thinking about it. Now what they did is they increased job opportunity. They met people's needs. They served the immediate needs. They did it with their masks, you know. I mean, it was brilliant. So an individual that sees things on the way, not in the way, will be solution-oriented, not problem-oriented, and not wanting to avoid the challenge, but actually tackle the challenge and come up with amazing solutions. And a lot of great creative companies are born and entrepreneurs are made. And a vast number of people that have been sitting on the fence about being an entrepreneur have been pushed over the edge and got into entrepreneurship and are going to end up with way more income in their life as a result of this over the long haul. So I don't see a crisis. I don't think it's fair to call this a crisis to people who are resourceful. I just think it's a crisis to people that are choosing to see it as a crisis and only see it that way. They're trapped that way.
And have you been adapting your events to be virtual?
Well, I landed from Tokyo. I was filming a movie there and also doing my breakthrough experience there.
Yeah.
And I flew into Los Angeles. I got there on Monday evening. I had the car service take me over to the hotel. And when I got to the hotel, we had planned on having a Wednesday program in the hotel and then a weekend program there, the breakthrough experience, a Wednesday evening kind of intro. On Tuesday, and at that time, they had a limit of 200 people. And it went to 50 on Monday night, and it went to 25, I think, Tuesday morning, and then they canceled it Tuesday evening. And so I immediately contacted everybody, not me, but I got my team to contact everybody and said, we're still having the program, it's online, and 70% of the same people, 75% of the same people showed up on it. And a whole bunch of people, once we put the notice out, that weren't going to come, that were not local, showed up. And we had twice as many people on the presentation because they wanted to hear what I had to say. And then we did the breakthrough experience that weekend, and we had people from different parts of the world on there that would not have ever been able to get there. And we had somebody from Madagascar and Kazakhstan and all kind of interesting places on the program. And we literally in 1.5 days migrated to the online Zoom, figured out we were already getting ready to move in that direction, but we pushed it that way. I learned how to be a bit more tech savvy. Everybody moved forward. And by the weekend, we did a very fulfilling weekend program. We just sat, and my daughter and I was there in Los Angeles. We just hugged each other and we go, I can't believe how smooth that went. That was amazing. And people were like thanking me. And I said, thank you. And we went on and I've done that for 7 months now. And I've done over 200 plus, I think 211 presentations and programs, some of them all day and multiple days since that time.
Wow. Unbelievable. Just want to give a shout out to some of the guys that have jumped in the chat. Hey, Neil, good morning from Perth. Anna's tuning in, saying hello here, Sonia. Who else we got? Shermaine, Catherine.
Beautiful women on there. I just see nothing but beautiful women calling in on you.
Must be that time of the morning.
What's going on? I don't get that.
Dr. DeMartini, to what extent do you think the media are playing a role in sensationalizing or enhancing some of the fear that people might be feeling at the moment?
There's no doubt in my mind that that adds to some of the benefits and the drawbacks. It polarizes people because it's unfair not to inform, but sometimes that information is slightly misinformation, and that can be alarming in nature. And so you can then make people on edge and make them go into their sympathetic nervous system, which then runs down the immune system to some degree, can be, not always, but can, and make them more vulnerable to their response. Because I've had people that assume they were going to die in April. And after about July, I found people going, well, I got it. I'm going through it. I mean, I've had 5 staff members have it. Well, that's not true. 4 staff members had it and a family member had it. So 5 people that I've watched go through it just in my own inner circle of my own company. And they're all alive. Nobody died from it. Some only missed out on 3 days of work and some missed out on about a week and a half. But the point is that their anxiety was, when they first found out about it, was shocking. And they started to think doomsday. And that had a lot to do with media coverage because otherwise they weren't even sure it was the corona at first. But then when they got the test back, that was corona. But the point is that we get flus sometimes that pretty knock people out pretty good. And then they recover and they go about their business. Now, I'm not negating, I'm not saying that this is not a unique strand, you know, and I'm not saying that it doesn't have, you know, high virility, but I'm just saying that it's not helped. If we actually sat and meditated and relaxed and ate wisely and breathed deeply and focused on what was really priority and did the things that helped rally our immune system, the numbers would probably be less. And so I'm sure that that's been a catalyst, but also I don't want to negate that it's not fair not to inform people. But I think what we can do is we can misinform people and scare people and add to the craziness.
Yeah.
Particularly when they started showing hospitals closed down and it started conspiracy stuff start happening.
Yeah.
That really makes people go in and, is this a conspiracy? You know, is this them planning this? Are they trying to kill us? Are they trying to depopulate? I mean, I heard crazy stuff that was going on. And then that makes you wonder, I have nobody to protect me. I'm futility. And that adds to the mix. So I think that it has benefits and drawbacks, but there's no doubt in my mind that some people took it in a way where that would aggravate the problem.
Yeah. So we can do all these things to protect ourselves, make sure we eat healthy, we do socially distance ourselves. But one of the biggest things that can affect our immune system is actually our psychology.
Absolutely.
And by focusing on the things that we can control, can you explain to us how that works from a neurological perspective?
Sure. Our immune system has been studied for many, many decades now. And what's interesting during the germ theory era, because of Pasteur, Fleming, and others, Koch, they all believed that virility was all inside the germ. And then now, in the last 20 years or so, the microbiome movement has made us realize that really the microbiome is a constantly evolving, adapting set of microbes, and that the immune system is no longer a defense system, it's a management system. And the management system is regulating through feedback systems the types of bacteria and organisms that are living together in some sort of mutualism to keep other organisms in check. They're even having therapies today by using microbes to overrule other microbes that are causing illness, because that's what they're doing with it. So as a result of that, the immune system, instead of it being protecting us from this bad guy out there, this thing that we want to blame, you know, this virus, it's now realizing that we need the viruses, we need the bacteria, this part of an evolutionary system, and we're needing to keep them in check. And our diet has an impact on it. And our autonomic nervous system is controlling it, having a massive control on it, because it controls the white blood cells, it controls the vasculature, many other things. So when we perceive more support than challenge, we get a parasympathetic response. We see more challenge and support, something that a predator is attacking us. If we perceive it that way, that this thing is going to attack us, our sympathetic comes on, and our sympathetic system can run down that immune system very quickly, because it's primarily for red blood cells for fighting and to get oxygen for fighting and running, and the white blood cells and the parasympathetic is for the immune function. So we're literally shutting down our immune power by perceiving it as such a threat, instead of seeing it as a wildlife management. And so our autonomic nervous system mediates, along with the immune system, mediates our responses and can cause an increased cytokine storm, for instance, which is not necessary because of the bug. It's our response to the bug. And so that's why we have to be accountable, and the host is a major factor. Because here we have people, 104-year-old guy made it through the corona, 104 years old, 98, 92, 101. These people are making it through corona. And then you have others that are really weak and they have responses. But their immune response can have an impact on it. A lot of the side effects and the death is not from just the virus. It's our immune response going into hyperdrive and overreacting, possibly from emotions. But nobody's really asking what those emotions are and really tracing that. It's not being talked about hardly. But I know from working with people with immune responses how important those things are, no doubt in my mind. Our perception, if we can balance out our perceptions and bring our mind into poise and keep it balanced, we're going to have a greater chance, even if we do get corona, which inevitably we're all going to have corona. There's nobody's going to escape corona. It's just a matter of when. Corona is going to be out there in the environment from now on. It's not going to go away. So we're all going to be facing it. It's a matter of how resilient we are and how adaptive we are and how do we respond to it.
Yeah. And so how do you see this all playing out with the way that the world's responding at the moment? Do you think we're on the right track?
Well, I don't want to make it a right or wrong track, not a moral thing. I think it's just a feedback to human behavior on our own levels of ignorance and our reactions to that ignorance. And I think people are dedicating their life to trying to figure out what to do. And others are dedicated to creating more calamities. And it's like, you know, like anything else in life. The first time something happens, we react. We're ignorant of it. We overreact usually. You know, I remember when the radar range came out, the microwaves, and there were people in religions that were calling it the devil, and the barcodes were devils, and people reacted and people picketed. And when I was a kid, I remember 7-Eleven, because the blue laws of religion, you weren't supposed to be doing anything of work on Sunday, and they were picketing 7-Elevens and saying it was a devil's place, and if you go in there, you'll die and you have eternal damnation and crazy stuff like that. I watched that when I was 4 years old, and I'm going, what kind of craziness is this? And I see that people react out of ignorance. And I don't say it. They don't react out of ignorance. They react out of what they assume is going on because of their ignorance. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. We never have fear of the unknown. We have fear of what we conjure up in our mind because we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big distinction. And we're responsible for that. It's not out there. It's our responsibility there.
So when coronavirus first came on your radar, where did you, were you aware of corona before it popped up this year? Or was it the research that you did when you found out about it?
Well, I knew about coronavirus. Corona means that the virus simply has protein receptors sticking off it, radiating out, giving it a shape of a corona, like a saint with light radiating off it, a crown. That's all it meant. And there's many coronaviruses. That's not new. There's been many, many, many coronaviruses. We have a series of those, and receptors are on every virus. So that has been in my awareness. I've been a radar for a long time. I mean, that's been around. We can trace that way back. The idea of the Wuhan bat relationship, you know, I studied initially. I understood that. I didn't know if that was what was true or not. I don't think anybody still knows all the facts yet. I think there's all kind of stories out there.
So the virus came from bats originally?
Well, no, not necessarily. We don't know that for a fact. We okay. do know that bats have a lot of coronaviruses.
Okay.
There's some bats have dozens of species of coronaviruses inhabiting them. So we know that that occurs. And they have responses, digestive response, respiratory responses. And because that's what we were noticing first, we assumed that. But now the variation of what goes on in the virus, it adapts pretty quickly. We're going to be watching this thing probably for years. It's not going to be just a quick thing. It'll be watched for years. We'll be studying more and more about it. And there'll be other versions of it along the way. That's inevitable. Whether or not it's partly manufactured or whether it's a natural strain, this has been debated. I can't prove one way or the other. There's evidence of it being a natural process. But, of course, there's also capacities for researchers to be involved in this. I can't prove it or disprove it at this point. I don't think anybody knows all the facts. I think we're just gathering data as we go along. But whatever we do, I know that what we have control over is our own immune response
yeah.
and our own state of mind. I always say trying to control something you don't have control over is futile. But controlling things you do have control over is wisdom. So you have control over what you eat. You have control over what you drink. You have control over how you live. You have control over social distancing, which is going to just prolong the thing in some respects, but also prevent some. But you don't have control over the virus. it's an obligate intracellular parasite that's going to be migrating from whatever host it can in order to survive. That's part of its mechanism. And you don't have control over that, but you do have control over researching it, so we can keep researching it until we figure the puzzle out. And I don't think we got the whole puzzle figured out. The idea of a vaccine is going to save the world is a bit of an illusion. A small percentage of people will ever get vaccinated. And you got people out there that would probably shoot people before you try to get to vaccinate them, as you know. So that's a little bit of an idea. That's a hope. You know, whenever you blame something on the outside, you typically look for something out there to rescue you.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we're going to have some casualties. And ultimately, each individual who's strong and resilient is going to keep going. And I think that that's inevitable. I do believe that social distancing and masking is potentially helping. Although now there's a strain that doesn't stop. You've seen that just this week. There's strains that are now that has no effect by that. It's in the airborne. It's airborne now. And so they found it in the Arctic already. So there's places in the Arctic that they found it. They're tracing it all over the world. So it's in the air. So there's no doubt that that's going to be all over the planet. So you can't control that. But what you can control is yourself and your response to it. And you can control things you can do that would reduce the probability of it. So I think that our response to that is sensible, but I think that our freak out and overreaction is going to work against us. The same thing occurred in the 2008-09 financial crisis.
Mm.
I made a statement and I sent it off to the president and I said, and of course, no response, but I've gotten response from presidents before, but not this one. I said, if I were you as a president, not that you're asking me, but if I were you, I would take Buffett and I would take Branson and Bill Gates and I would take Bezos. I would take the top seven wealthiest people in the world that people look up to as a wise guy. And I would have them on a panel and I would have them outline the wisest thing they can do to prevent a crash in the market to save their fortunes and get on there with authority and take a bunch of authorities out there that people would look up to that are sensible, that are reasonable, and educate people on how to respond. Not that that's going to guarantee it, but it's probably going to curtail part of it. I think educated people are less reactive than uneducated people.
Yeah. Yeah, you touched on something there, which I think is worth elaborating on. You talked about when you blame things outside yourself, whether it be other people or circumstances, you give away your power. Do you mind just delving into that a little bit more for the people tuning in?
Yeah, I had a gentleman the other day that had a what I would describe as a dissociative state. When you've had a trauma, you naturally, as a response, go into a freeze response, dissociate from it, and then create sort of a fantasy in the mind to deal with it. It's a survival strategy, and it's been known, and it's used. Freud thought that religions emerged that way. That's the source of religions, according to Freud. We're frightened about nature. We don't understand it. So we dissociate from it and create a protector to make us deal with it. And so as long as we blame something on the outside and dissociate from our own perceptions, it's our perceptions that's doing this, not what's out there. And then we're going to look for some solution on the outside. Instead of looking at our own nature, we look outside. Now, this was shown up in the Nidian and the Cone School of healthcare in the time of the Greek classical period. There were two different models. The masses of people that were uneducated wanted to blame things on the outside, wanted to look for solutions on the outside. And the intelligentsia wanted to look at what they had as an empowered state. They're used to being in control. They're used to being directed. They're used to being accountable and giving the orders. And so they don't think of blame and solution outside. They think of inside. And the Nidian school was the outside version, and the Cone school was the accountability. So Hippocrates was more of the Cone school. He was more of the idea that look to the host and don't blame things on the outside and look for solutions within you in your behavior and in your perceptions, and you have more power. And the other ones were blame a virus, get a vaccine or get a drug, blame a devil and get an angel. And the gentleman that I worked with the other day, this dissociate, had a fear about somebody, turned it into a demon, and then started talking to angels to rescue him. And he was dissociated, a classical dissociation. And he was not willing to embrace that it was his perception that's causing this dissociation. And I see that's an extreme example, but I see the same thing in human behavior. People want to be externally driven. And William James, father of modern psychology, said that the greatest discovery of his generation, this is 125 years ago, is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their perceptions and attitudes of mind. And I'm a firm believer, if you ask, we can sit there and go, well, this thing is causing all this problem, and we can run that story and be a victim of it, or we can sit down and go, how's it helping me? And now we changed our perception of it. We've returned it back to, it's up to us. Let's take command. And then we go to priority. We don't look for something outside us. We look at what are we going to do, prioritize to maximize this opportunity. And that's a accountable response that intelligent people that live in their forebrain and executive function live by. And the other is an amygdala response where we avoid predator, seek prey, and it's all external.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in taking command of your life and being a master of your destiny, not a victim of your history.
Yeah. It's almost like people look for a reason to justify why, you know, they're not in the situation they want to be. And the easiest way to do that is to look at external forces, isn't it?
Well, it's simpler that way. I used to live on the streets, as you know, when I was a kid. I was a street kid. I remember going into diners and looking for saltine crackers and ketchup for dinner and finding leftover foods on things. So I know what it's like to be on the streets and live with nothing. And it's easy to blame the government, blame this, blame that, everything else. But I never found that got me anywhere. I found that all that did is just kept me in bondage to a kind of a victim life. But then I got this gentleman that woke me up kind of and made me realize that I had the capacity to change my perceptions, my decisions, my actions, you might say. And the second I did, all that stuff out there changed. My subconsciously stored baggage got lifted, and I realized I had the fuel to do something amazing with whatever's happened in my life. It is not what happens to you. It's what you decide to do with it. And so if we decide to make corona a devastating corona, well, then we're trapped because we can't control that. It's out there. When Hurricane Andrew many years ago hit Florida, people were blaming Hurricane Andrew as devastating Andrew. That's what they labeled it. The media had it that way. Everything is devastation. It destroyed the country, destroyed this, destroyed that. But over the next 5 years, the economic boomed, all the homes were rebuilt, the surge of economics and the standards and quality and buildings and everything else, all those same people 5 years later were calling it St. Andrew. So why have the wisdom of the ages with the aging process when you can ask on the spot, not wait days, weeks, months, years, or decades to find out the blessing of what's happening in life, but look right this minute in it. If you study Wilhelm Wundt, who's a psychologist also at the time of James, he said that there was a law of contrast. The law of contrast was a symmetrical realization that no matter what we perceive, the opposite is always in our awareness, or we have access to it. We are unconscious of it, but it's always there. And it's so true. And I've proven that in my breakthrough experience program that I've taught around the world, that the moment you perceive something, whatever you're perceiving, you're only judging it because you're comparing it to an opposite. And so in your awareness, in your unconscious, your intuition is trying to reveal that so you can center yourself and not react. And so if you ask the right questions to become aware of what your unconscious is revealing, you can center yourself and come up with solutions instead of blame. And it is so much more freeing to do that. And it's not that difficult to do. It's just asking the right question and becoming aware. So if you sat down and got a piece of paper out,
yeah,
and went into action and calmed down and then got creative. And that's exactly the wise thing to do. And many people will sit there and go, no, I don't believe that. There's no benefit to this. That's all evil. It's all good. But think about this. If I went to you, Nathaniel, and I said to you, you're always nice, never mean. Always kind, never cruel. Always positive, never negative. Always peaceful, never wrathful. Always generous, never stingy. Always giving, never taking. Always considerate, never inconsiderate. Your BS meter would go off and you're going, you'd be thinking of all the times you've been just the opposite of what I said.
I quite like this out of that.
You know it would be BS. You know? But if I said to you, you're always mean, you're never nice, you're always cruel, you're never kind, you're always negative, never positive, always wrathful, never peaceful, always taking, never giving, always inconsiderate, never considerate, you're also your bull S meter would go off and you'd immediately go, no, neither one of those are true. But if I said to you, sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, and I said, sometimes you're both, you would immediately go, that's true. You would know. You would have certainty that that's true. We only have certainty and centeredness when we have objectivity. We don't have it when we have these subjective biases and extremes. So to label the virus as all bad, no good, all take, no give, all loss, no gain, all negative, no positive, is a subjective bias that will trap you and occupy your mind and make you in your amygdala and keep you out of creative ideas. But by asking what's the other side and getting back into the balance and find the certainty, in comes the executive center and in comes solutions. And solutions are always there. There's never a problem we don't have the capacity to find a solution for.
Yeah.
That's the way life is. And you know what? Almost everything that we've looked on in the life that we thought was going to get and destroy us, I mean, they just found, you saw this on they're now generating jets with hydrogen fuel. So they're about to change the entire amount of combustion and carbon release, everything else. I mean, way down, like drastically down. Solutions are popping up all over the place for the so-called global warming, even though in the glacial national forest, there's more glaciers going on right now than ever. It's been actually growing ice, not receding ice, but people don't know that. The reality is that there's a solution out there. People react, but wise people don't react. They get into action, find solutions, and move forward.
Yeah. One of the things I have been doing, whether I guess it's helped me a lot. In Perth, we're quite lucky. There are no lockdown restrictions anymore. But certainly since coronavirus started and even before that, I mean, I limit the amount of news that I watch, the amount of media that I consume, purely because I've found that the majority of it is very much biased to the negative. And so I'm curious, where do you go for your news or information? Do you consume mainstream media or?
When I was 18 years old, I walked into Wharton Library and I came across a very beautiful book by Gandhi, My Experiments with Truth. And then I read his memoirs, his actual day-to-day documentation of what he was going through each day. And it was written and you couldn't read it all. I mean, it was typed up in English. And I realized that he said that he doesn't watch the media. The only time he's even involved in the media is when he's on the media. And I've been following that ever since. I I don't watch the media as much as I go on and contribute to the media. And I try to make sure that I contribute something of value to the media. Hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that I haven't seen it standing in an airport, you know, sometimes waiting for a plane. That doesn't mean that sometimes people don't tell me all kind of stuff. I get stuff indirectly. And sometimes I look up stuff if I'm going to be asked on an interview. But I don't, I found out if I don't fill my day with high priority actions that are deeply meaningful, I fill my day up with things that are not. And I personally would rather read Syntopicon Volumes 1 and 2 by Mortimer Adler and fill my brain with the greatest ideas by the greatest minds who stood on the planet for the last 2,700 years than I would to watch a silly media. Because most of that's misinformation. It's skewed with subjective bias. It's polarized. The media is designed for sensation, to get people's attention in the masses, to get people, so for commercial purposes. And I've been on, God, thousands. I've been on probably 9,000 different media channels and media outlets of some form, in radio, television, newspaper, magazine, and stuff. And I've been on shows, on financial news network shows, everything else. And I went on this one show that's hilarious. And it was, and there was a guy there that had this printout of a bunch of stocks and had a dartboard in the back. And I was about to do an interview with me on economics and personal finance. And I was sitting in the back waiting in the green room, and that's what they were doing. And the guy, I said, "What are you guys doing?" He says, "Well, we're giving them the pick of the stocks tonight." And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, we do what the Dow Jones Averages, we call it." There was a book called The Dow Jones Averages, where it's just rushing roulette. They just throw it out there, and then that you're about as lucky as anybody else out there in the market. And that doesn't mean that information is not valuable. It's just that sometimes it's misinformation and it's bias. So they were up there giving those out. And I said, "Why on earth are you taking a dartboard list of stocks and feeding people that dartboard?" And they said, "Because there's no harm in it." I go, "Why?" It's because the average person who's actually watching this show do not invest. They're wannabes. They're fantasizers. They're not actually doing it. But they want to have the tip to make them look important in front of their buddies. So we do the tip every night. And I go, "Wow." I said, and what do you call that? Integrity? Yeah. I just said that. I said, and I said, you know, when I come on this, when I share something on here, I'm not going to share anything that I'm not certain about that's not going to be helpful to people. Hmm. They said, "We can only have about 10% of our show like that." And I go, "Whoa, I got it firsthand from a news network. This is a major network. This wasn't some super dodgy network. This is a major network giving out information for sensationalism, because if it doesn't sensate, it doesn't sell."
Yeah. Crazy. Okay. Oh, you've given a lot of value already. So just to summarize, let's pick three. It can be more than three, it can be less than three, but what are some of the action steps that business owners should take from here to fill their life with high priority items that are in line with their values and take back control and take back their power?
Well, the first thing is not to self-righteously, narcissistically project your assumptions on what the market is needing. Go find out where there's a demand. There's no demand, you won't be able to sell anything. And don't presume you know what it is, because you can fool some of the people, but you can't get them all. So find out what the real needs are and care enough about humanity to ask the right questions to establish a real need before you try to offer a service. Because if you're trying to offer a service that doesn't match a need, it's going to backfire on your brand anyway. But make sure you find out what's really needed. That's one. Because you need to find a niche, what your demands are. We do little programs almost every day. And we find out and pay close attention which ones are getting a demand, where there's thousands of people that are coming on, and which people are not responding, and that gives us feedback. But we also do research looking at what people are searching for, et cetera. Make sure you have something that meets a demand. And if not, I had one gentleman who was smart enough to go and merge with another company temporarily who could meet those demands and had skills in marketing, and they joined together, and then they were meeting demands with one skill and another skill. And that was a new added component to their company, because now they're meeting needs. The second thing is to find the thing that you can't wait to really, really do deliver that really meets needs. Because if you're not inspired to want to deliver it, you're losing sales because you're not inspired. You're not really doing something. To sell something that doesn't mean anything to you is hell. Because money without meaning leads to debauchery. But money with meaning and something inspiring leads to philanthropy. That's been shown over and over through the centuries. So find something you're deeply meaningful that's high in your values, you said, that really does make you want to get up and become masterful at it and deliver quality service and be fully engaged, because people can tell when you're engaged. If you're not engaged, they don't want to do business with you.
Yeah.
Everybody's been to a department store or a restaurant or someplace where the person's sitting there doing their nails and not paying attention to you. And you go, God, this service sucks. And you don't go back. If you're not engaged, you're not inspired, and you're not selling something you believe in that's really meaningful to you, and you're not finding the niche that really has a demand, life is going to be hell in a business. You have those responsibilities. Find something that, see, equity is finding something that inspires you, that's something that fulfills others. If you do it where it inspires you but doesn't fulfill others, no business. And fills other people's values but no inspiration, debauchery. But if you find something that's both, you have equity between you, you really got a power there. And then you want to ask yourself, what is the highest priority actions I can do today that produce the greatest results, serving the greatest number of people with the resources I have, that I would love to do in the most effective and efficient and absolutely inspiring manner? And if you stick to those three basic components, you got a good start.
Yeah.
That's a great start. And then delegate. If you're not delegating, you're trapped.
Yeah.
I'm useless in anything but research, write, travel, teach. That's it. That's all I do. I research every day. I write every day. I travel on Zoom now, and I teach. Everything else I delegate.
For those of you tuning in that don't know Dr. DeMartini as well as some of us, he hasn't driven a car or cooked a meal in, what, 20-plus years?
I haven't cooked since I was 24. I'm 66. And I haven't driven a car in over 30 years.
So there you go, the power of delegation. And I just want to reiterate the question that I've got written on my whiteboard here, which has really made a big difference, excuse me, is how is what is happening right now serving me? You know, how can I use what's happening right now to be of more service to others? And I think by asking the right questions, you come up with more solution-based answers. And that's something that I have got from you, Dr. DeMartini. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, if you're accountable to answer the question, you get a result. There's seven questions that I mentioned in my breakthrough experience that is fun to get. What is it I would absolutely love to do in my life? How do I get handsomely and beautifully paid to do that? So my vocation is my vacation. What are the highest priority actions I can do today to move me in that direction? What obstacles might I run into that could interfere with that? And how do I solve in advance with foresight? What worked and what didn't work today towards that objective? How do I do it more effectively and efficiently tomorrow by metricing and feedback? And how did, no matter what happened to me today, how's it helped me get there? Those are very powerful questions. If you just answer those seven little questions every day, you'd be surprised. You're more likely to have a fulfilling life. And I assure you, entrepreneurship buys you way more freedom than working for other people in most cases.
Yeah.
If you have the capacity to live by your highest values, you wake up entrepreneurial spirit. And that is a very powerful thing, and if you can invest, you know, that one of the greatest things a person can do is invest. Because I was just teaching my daughter about this. We were having a discussion about it just a few hours ago. And she's a great investor now. We've got her on track. If you don't invest, you pay the most taxes. And I'm not saying that's bad or good, but you're working harder and you're getting less. In my case, 44% of every dollar goes to taxes, just in federal taxes. And there's other taxes. In some states, in some places, it's up to 80-something percent of your dollar goes to taxes. So that's insane. You're working really hard as a slave to that. But if you invest and you have long-term capital gains, in most countries, even in your country, you have benefits from that. If you have long-term capital gains, you reduce your taxes and you save the government enormous amounts of money of rescuing desperate people later on, because you're autonomous, you're independent, you don't require the government to rescue you. And you now are going to work because, not because you have to, but because you love to, because you took the time to manage your money wisely with long-term vision instead of immediate gratification. And so I'm a firm believer in valuing yourself enough to take a portion of what have you earned and let it work for you with compound interest instead of you working your whole life for money. Because otherwise you're a slave to money instead of an investor and a master of it. I try to tell people and teach people how to master all areas of life. Finances is just one of them. But that's a very crucial one in today's world. If you don't master it, you're going to be a statistic. And the government, I assure you, the Social Security equivalents in each country do not provide you the lifestyle of your dreams. You can, as an entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. DeMartini. It's always a pleasure catching up. To the guys tuning in, if you ever do get the opportunity, well, you do have the opportunity, to attend Dr. DeMartini's breakthrough experience. It sounds like it's probably easier now to attend than it ever has been. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Thank you for the questions. And whoever's out there, give yourself permission to do something extraordinary on the planet. The magnificence of who you really are is greater than all the fantasies you'll ever put on yourself.
Thank you. It's been a privilege.
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you for your great service.